is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
There's no combination of words I could put on the back of a postcard. No song that I could sing, but I can try for your heart. Our dreams, and they are made out of real things, like a shoebox of photographs.
7:42, coming up, Know Your Monkey. Love is the answer. Know Your Monkeys. For Monkeys tickets.
That's with a Y.
Know Your Monkeys at 7:42.
Look you know, what I'm eating right now.
I'm sorry?
Look what I'm eating.
Oh, right look now. At you. You're having a banana, you little
just
monkey.
For the
look
occasion.
At you. At 7:42, the voice you're about to hear is one of the legends of WGN and a friend of mine who I have not spoken to in a long time. But here's what guys do. Guys get together and they start talking and they haven't talked to each other. I bet it's been a year, 2 years maybe, since I talked to this guy. And you start talking and in 30 seconds, you're right back to where you were. You know, there's no awkwardness or anything.
Nope. You just pick up where you left.
That's exactly right. Ladies and gentlemen, Max Armstrong.
And, of course, there's no awkwardness when you leave it to the guy by saying, oh, it's monkey time. We're going to talk to the monkey here. Thank you. Appreciate that. You rascal, you.
How are you, buddy?
I'm doing swell. How are you folks?
We're doing fine. I miss you.
I hear the U-Haul's backed up to the back door there.
Yeah. Well, listen, we got to move the whole building. I hope that's not a problem. I hope your back is still strong.
Well, listen, hey, I moved enough stuff up three flats on the north side of Chicago for the youngest daughter. I served notice at everybody that I was out of moves.
Is that right?
More the ways
kid,
than one.
The kid moved to the third floor of a three flat, and I thought she liked you.
Oh, it happened more than once, pal. I'm telling you.
So here's the deal, Max. Next Friday, we assume, though this is a contractor situation, it could take a little longer. Next Friday, we assume, will be our last day here. So we wanted to connect with you to talk about all the years you spent in this building, because I believe you were here at 86 when they came back from Bradley Place, weren't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes, and it was an exciting time. You know, where the Showcase Studio is, there used to be the candy store, of course.
Okay.
And it moved across to there. But it, yeah.
What was the candy store?
I don't. Fannie Mae.
Fannie Mae was in this spot?
Yes.
Prior to the Showcase Studio.
You're right there. I mean, you could right now grab some bonbons.
Bonbons and the nonpareils, but yeah, yes. All those? Okay. So when did the Showcase Studio go in? Was it shortly after that?
It was a little bit delayed because of the fact that there was a shortage of bulletproof glass back in those days. True story. There had been terror incidents around the world of the State Department. It was having to upgrade the embassies all around the world. And so there was a shortage of the glass needed in a studio of that nature. So it was a little bit delayed, as I recall, in the opening in 1986. But, you know, it's such a strange thing. There was no Showcase Studio in Chicago at that time. You know, nobody was showcasing their news department on television or doing anything in the way of radio. So this was really new to the city at the time.
Yeah, and back to the bulletproof for a second, because this glass has been replaced, I think, historically three different times. After 9/11, the FBI and the CIA both came through here because the Tribune Tower was a target. And we were told that the glass might not... It's funny now. The glass might not be bulletproof, but it is bullet resistant. I said, what is bullet resistant?
Yeah, right.
So it like bounces off.
Well, it's like water resistant windbreakers. So it had to be replaced again. All right. So was there anybody in the country doing a Showcase Studio?
Yeah, you know, there were some cities, some smaller cities where you would see them. For example, I remember in Indianapolis back in the late 60s, the rock station there, WYFE, had a Showcase Studio along Meridian, as I recall. So there were some across the country, certainly even as early as the 60s. But it was pretty new to Chicago, as a matter of fact. And to put a microphone outside where you could talk to people, that was very different, too.
Yeah, I used to open the afternoon show every day with that. Now, here's the deal. The rest of the building, where people didn't normally get to see, has stories all to its own. And the big room, where you and I used to occasionally see each other, I used to call it the Vegas room, down here on this first floor, that's where all the biggest stars of WGN worked.
Yeah, it was a huge studio. Of course, it was a multi-purpose studio. One side of it, you operated with an engineer at the control board to handle all of the input on those very busy shows. And then the other position was where the announcer ran the board themselves, the combo position, as it was called in the industry. But in that studio in total, I think there were 11 microphones between the, maybe more than that, about a dozen microphones between the one end of the studio to the other.
Favorite memories from shows or people you worked with?
Oh, where do you start, Steve? There were just so many over the years. But, you know, talking about the building and the center that it was, two things stand out in my mind. The morning of the big underground flood in Chicago.
Oh, sure.
And I remember walking out, and of course, the Tribune building took in water in, what, the fifth or sixth basement. You know, there are multiple basements in that building. And there was water that came into the Tribune building in that underground flood. But you walked out on the street at 10 o'clock in the morning, and it was like a ghost town. It was like it might have been Sunday morning. There was nobody on the streets. And, of course, the morning of the terrorist attacks of 9/11, when you saw the commute coming in the 7 o'clock hour, and 90 minutes later there was a reverse commute, this great big sucking sound out of the downtown area as people were headed home.
Tell me about working with Wally.
It was remarkable. Of course, you had to be on your toes all the time. You never knew what was going to be coming up between Wally and his longtime veteran producer, Marilyn Miller, who contributed mightily to that show. And then the various engineers who sat at the control board and dropped in those sound tracks that Wally needed in the show. It was just a great thing. And, of course, he was pioneering back in those days. He was the first to call up people and put them on the radio. And finally, the Federal Communications Commission said, oh, wait a minute. You need to be telling these people you're putting them on the radio.
You know, good morning. I was trying to count up the number of people who worked on Wally's show the other day. We were having a conversation, and back on Bradley Place when I first started and walked into the studio for the first time, and I think you were in there. There were two news anchors. There was a record turner, a music director, an engineer, Marilyn producing, another producer. I was a cast of thousands to produce that radio show. It's really remarkable when you consider how technology has advanced and how much went into that, because everything was on, they were on discs, the commercials,
all the
right?
Commercials. Yeah, all of the commercials were. They would take the commercial, and for every other show, it would be on tape cartridge. But as you very correctly remember, Dave, when the commercial was prepared for Wally, it would be put on a disc. The staff musician, the record turner, would cue up that disc and write down the first 8 to 10 words of that commercial and put it over on the easel in front of Wally. That way he knew how to lead into it. He would say, now, George, you were saying what? And the commercial would start, hey, I want to talk to you about this banking problem. You know, something like that. It was very smooth and fluid.
The choreography. All right, so then Bob Collins comes in. And Orion tells the story of how, and he became best friends with Bob Collins later on, but he tells the story of meeting Bob Collins, and this was this country boy sort of yokel, and he was thinking in his head, what the hell's going on at WGN? What was your reaction?
That's right. Well, Bob had been there 3 years already by the time I arrived, and he was doing his split shift in the afternoon between 2 and 4, and then he'd come back in the evening at 7 to 9. And there were more than a few evenings between 4 and 7 spent at Grover's Groovy Oyster Bar up on Irving Park Road.
Oh, yeah.
and I went there, I think, with him a few times, and I'd wrap up the market reports late in the afternoon, and I think that's about when Orion called me aside and said, now, son, I don't think this is probably the best thing for your future to be going with Bob Collins at the Grover's Oyster Bar.
And I'm right about this story, right? Didn't they become best friends before Bob passed?
And they certainly were not at the outset. Now, by the time I arrived in 77, they had gotten over that bump. But, you know, I mean, there was some mutual animosity at the outset. Neither one felt the other should be there at the station. But, as you say, the friendship was very firm. They loved each other dearly. And it's been obviously a terrible loss for all of us, but especially for Orion to not have the friendship and companionship of Bob Collins, who was just such a close friend.
Max, I have to just recall one thing, which was I would come in when Spike was doing his show here at the Tower from Studio A, and I would come in to do the sports at 5 o'clock. You would spend that last half hour from 4:30 to 5 with Steve and Johnny, or approximately 4:30. Steve would do the front page, right? He'd do what was in the papers that day. And then you'd come in, and I would always come in there, and invariably, and that was before Spike would come in and kiss you on the head or whatever, but Johnny would be in hysterics because of something, usually something you had said.
Well, the truth can now be told, Dave. I mean, I would stop out in Lyle on my way in. I would stop and get a Mountain Dew. I would drink a Mountain Dew on my way downtown.
Oh, so that's what happened to you, Max. Now we know.
Yes, Mary, I was a walking time bomb when I came in back.
You were hilarious.
He was all sugared up.
I was like, what's wrong with him?
Exactly right. Now the truth can be told. Okay, there's one more story I have to tell you about that building. That microphone out of the front window?
Yeah.
When that microphone was put out there by the late Ed Wilkes, longtime WGN engineer,
sure.
One of the most knowledgeable people in broadcast transmitters that I had ever met, and he was just a wonderful gentleman. And was single back in those days. He had not been married, never been married, and he wore the pocket protector. Ed Wilk was your stereotypical engineer. He told me in confidence one day, he said, Max, we're trying to put that microphone out there on the window, and we're having a problem. I'm trying to figure out how to waterproof that thing. He told me then he called the microphone company, Shure Microphone Company, and they said, well, you can do what they do at the White House. Ed said, what's that? They put a prophylactic on the microphone. So Ed got the material, got the latex, and wrapped that microphone, the early microphones out of that window at least, were protected that way.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's turn it on right now.
Is it still on there?
It's on there. Hello? 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 It doesn't sound like there's a condom covering it now.
You should get a random person walking by to take it off.
Steve?
Yeah, you know what? The microphone that we'll have at the new place is 18 floors up, so you're going to have to shout. But it's great talking to you. I'm glad life is great, and I hope I see you soon, buddy. I love reconnecting with you.
Oh, I love talking to you guys. Appreciate your great work. I listen to you from afar many mornings and from nearby at least one morning of the week.
Well, thanks for all you're doing, and you'll see O before we do again, and say hi to him.
All right, will do. You guys take care. Good luck with the move over there. I can't wait to come in and help spoil the premises.
Yeah, I'll call you as soon as it's done. It's Max Armstrong. He's no longer in the moving business.